Hello, everyone. Kyle here. I just want to let you know that ahead in this episode is a review and overview of our thoughts on The Force Awakens. There are spoilers ahead, so if you are listening in your house, you have a few minutes here. We don't dive into spoilers right away, but I just want to let you know you have some time to press pause and wait until you have seen it. And if you haven't seen it, you should. So just wanted to give you a little heads up. Happy holidays to you and yours from the Remakers Mark crew, and we'll talk to you soon. Remakers Mark Special Episode 14, The Force Awakens. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remakers Mark. Here we are in our 14th special episode, a very special episode indeed, because we are going to be doing a review, discussion, what have you, celebration, boy howdy, of the recently released Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks, Lee Han Solo, and Mark Josting. Jeremy Nilsson was not able to join us tonight. He was doing family Christmas things. So, Jerry, we miss you. We hope you're having a wonderful time and lots of cream caca. And I don't know, we'll see. Maybe he sends something our way. We'll see. If we do, we'll try to drop it in the episode. But for now, the four of us will do our best to capture everything that is The Force Awakens. So,
I say because of Jerry's absence, we only refer to him as Jar Jar tonight.
We'll do. Let's have some degree of honor and call him Jer Jer.
Yes, fair enough.
I think that's totally fair. So before we talk about Force Awakens, let's do just a quick rundown of our history with Star Wars, which is long and illustrious, I must say. We are a Star Wars friendly group, shall we say, overall. We have played Star Wars Trivia Pursuit many times, including a handmade trophy by one Lee, our very own. He created one that says Master Jedi Geek. In fact, I just turned my head and it is sitting on a windowsill in my studio here because I was the last victor last Star Wars Trivia Pursuit.
Casual
Trivia.
Mention.
The last two victors of
I've had pretty good luck. You know what my secret is that I was a way bigger Star Wars nerd with prequel stuff than everybody else, and there's just enough prequel stuff in the version that we play to get me, I think, over the top. I think I'm lesser in the original trilogy than you guys, but I'm a little bit better at the prequels, and it balances out.
I remember you were able to steal one of my answers on Poggle the Lesser, and I was like, who the f*** is Poggle the Lesser?
Yep. This is going to be a bleep-heavy episode. I like this.
I don't care. It's a special episode. We can do that.
Yeah.
We can drop that. We had a progressive Star Wars lunch, dinner, drink party for Jeremy's birthday, Jer's birthday a few years ago, where we started at my house and I served sandwiches along with blue milk, which was white Russians with blue food coloring in them. And then we went to Lee's place for the next two movies for dinner and desserts after that. And it was glorious. We have a Star Wars role-playing game that is going to be starting up here in the next maybe our holiday break. We'll have to figure that out, but coming up shortly here,
we did a
special episode, our first special episode, in fact, entitled When You Wish Upon a Star Wars. We will link to that in the show notes, which was recorded a couple weeks or a couple months after the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney, and right after they announced episode 7, 8, and 9 were going to be happening, and specifically the spinoff. So that was all about what we would like to see in the Star Wars world. We had two episodes, as we usually do, about Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, how we would remake that. And our next film in the docket is Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. So needless to say, we've got a little bit of history with Star Wars. So I think we are rather informed in this regard, and I think, you know, we certainly can speak to this in a way that is both fanboy and, you know, potential critic. I think we're all fans overall, but it doesn't mean that we're blinded to what is good or bad about this. But I think we'll probably say more good things tonight than bad things, to give a little tease. Let's talk a little bit about how we saw The Force Awakens. So myself, Lee, Mark, and Jer was good enough to go to the Showplace Icon Theater in St. Louis Park the day the tickets were available, and he got 12 tickets with reserved seats, which if you have a theater near you that does reserved seats, after you do that, doing anything else just feels barbaric. It's just like, what?
Yeah, right?
I have to show up more than 1 second ahead of the showtime? This is outrageous. You can become Newt Gunray, apparently, I guess. I don't know.
That was your Newt Gunray? Yeah,
that,
oh, man.
No, I was that was my non-racist Newt Gunray. So we did that, and it was a very good experience. In fact, Jer's aunt, who took him to see the original Star Wars in the theater, I believe his first movie in the movie theaters, right?
Yep.
Was there. So we got to meet her, which was really cool. And we gave her a big high five and a hug for having, you know, done that.
She's
and,
kind of
you
legendary.
Know, I don't know. We might not know Jer had she not done that.
I know.
Yeah,
we basically have her to thank for Jer. So
Completely.
It's true.
As we know, Jer. So that was cool, and we had a very good experience. There was lots of cheers from when the crawl happened to when the fanfare started to introductions of characters. It was a very this was Thursday night at 10 o'clock, so not the very, very first showing, but the one that right after that, and it was awesome. Anyone, Mark or Lee, anything you want to add to that? Oh, we saw it in 3D as well.
Yep. I have to say that the only other time, the only other movie-going experience where the audience started cheering at the opening titles was Star Wars Episode One, and then this one, it was cheering
from
there.
How foolish they were.
Yeah, but this is the only one where, you know, there were cheers happening throughout the movie. I've never experienced that before, and I've been going to movies for quite a long time now.
The only I think I've only seen one other film where there was applause in the middle of it, and that was, I think, Episode Two, where where Yoda first brandishes his lightsaber.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I think I had that too. I had somebody behind me that was very much narrating the movie in a very stylized manner, like it was like the equivalent of the guy at a horror movie that was like, "No, don't go in there." He was like that guy for Episode Two, which. I don't know. It wasn't great. It was annoying, but now it's kind of funny looking back on it. Before I pretty much wanted to stab him, but now I've become a little bit kinder. Andy, tell us about your experience in seeing The Force Awakens.
Yeah, here in the Eastern time zone, I went to a AMC theater in Holland and visited with my brother-in-law and father-in-law. We saw the movie in 3D. We did not have assigned seats, and it was barbaric.
Like animals.
Like animals. We were like cattle. No, we got there. It was funny. We got there probably an hour ahead of time. Not really. I had no idea if there was going to be a line or anything like that. And there wasn't. We could just kind of strolled right in. And
nice.
The lady at the counter was like, "Oh, yeah, you can go. Grab your seats if you want." Like, okay. And we were, I think, the fourth, fifth, and sixth people to walk into the theater. So we had our pick of the seats, which was nice. But then shortly after we got there, then the place filled up quickly. So I'm glad we got there when we did. And watching the previews in 3D, holy buckets, the movies that are coming out in 3D right now look like steaming piles of horse that are just like, they're like in 6D, and it was almost nauseating. And I remember thinking to myself for a fleeting second, like, is this what the movie's going to be like? Like, I can't handle this if this is what it's going to be like, but it was fine. The movie was fine. But those previews.
What was an example of one of the previews?
The Gods of Rome was one that I saw.
Oh, Gods of Egypt, yeah.
Oh, the Gods of Egypt, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And there was another one that was, the Warcraft movie premiere.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, was just.
Yeah, that was a lot of D.
Holy buckets.
Is the Warcraft movie, is that based on a video game?
Yes. Yeah, it's based on World of Warcraft. And that's Duncan Jones, who did Moon, David Bowie's kid. So I'm very hopeful for that, because I really enjoyed Moon. I mean, that's like...
You know, it looked interesting in the sense of, like, you know, they're giving personality and story to the orc army. That's fine. But, like, visually, it was just like, oh, I feel like I can't close my eyes and it hurts.
Yeah, so we saw it in 3D as well, and I didn't know if we were seeing it in 3D or not. I'd never asked Jer that, and you know, I was disappointed when we got the 3D glasses. I mean, I'm not going to be disappointed when I'm seeing it opening night. I would see it like facing the other way if I had to, you know, if they put me behind a pole or something. Probably wouldn't be happy, but I'd make it work. I got to say, it was pretty good. The only criticism that I have of 3D overall is that it makes big movies make characters feel small, because it isolates characters from the background enough that you're keenly aware of how small they are in the frame, because they're separated that way. You know, there's that depth of field, which can be really interesting. But like, I found that I didn't have that. And this was a big effing theater and a big effing screen. And there are moments that things that should have felt just like giant and overwhelming felt very like toy-like because of that. So that's the only thing that really bugged me about 3D. After a while, it took me kind of 5 minutes to probably get adapted, 5 minutes to realize that I was watching it in 3D, and then the rest of it, I was just in awe of everything. Yeah. So
there was one scene in the movie where I think you come across, the camera pans across the settles on like the bow of the First Order Star Destroyer. It looks like it's about to poke you in the eye because the 3D makes it pop out of the screen. And then I see several kids sitting next to me reach out their hands like toward the screen. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I saw that when I saw Up in 3D. That was maybe the second movie I saw in 3D. I saw Beowulf, which was terrible. And then I saw Up in 3D, and it was that same thing. Like when the balloons come out of the house and come in, you just saw all these kids in front like reaching out and trying to grab them. It was pretty neat.
To be fair, I mean, kids do that with any balloon or any image of balloon.
That's true. That's true. Fair enough. They just lunge at TVs left and right. Note to self, never put anything that has balloons on when there's wee kids around. So that is how we saw the film. Now let's talk about the film itself. I think overall it seems like we had a pretty positive experience. I just have a few kind of bullet points here that I thought we could kind of focus on, but really this is going to be pretty loose. So I'll just start up by saying that, you know, this movie, Episode 7, obviously is a continuation of Episodes 1 through 6, especially Episodes 4 through 6, in that it, you know, the prequels have been pretty maligned, I think somewhat deservedly, I think somewhat roughly. They're not great movies, but I don't think they're as bad as people have made them out to be. But they do not live up to Episodes 4 through 6. And I think the goal for this and the fear of this is, would it live up to the originals? So let us just go around the horn here and say, do you guys feel like this, just one word, yes or no, do you feel like this captured the spirit of the original trilogy and was a worthy sequel to them? Andy, how about you?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Yes, excellent. I would agree. I think it's very much I think it's in line with the spirit of the original. It was incredibly fun, incredibly well made, really, really fast action, really funny. And the first thing I wanted to talk about is that the old characters are back, right? So the characters
are episodes. Are we sounding a big spoiler horn right now, first of all?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I forgot to do that. So we will be featuring spoilers in this. I mean,
nice spoiler, you know, foghorn.
Spoiler cocktail.
Maybe Mark, can you give me a spoiler giraffe sound?
Yes.
Maybe we should put that at the beginning of the episode.
Like, I will put that there,
yeah,
too.
Like, yeah, like there's going to be spoilers. We're going to talk about stuff.
Yep,
so.
Yep, you got it. So old characters are back, which is great. So Han, Luke, and Leia, and then a few others as well. Admiral Ackbar is in there, which was pretty awesome to see. Mm-hmm. I think he was pretty awesome. And he looked beautifully... lo-fi. Yes. I was so happy. It's like they just grabbed the mask, dusted it off, and threw it on whoever was there, and it was great. I love that. Who else was back? What are their 3PO. Whatever? 3PO, R2, yep. Anybody else?
I'm trying to think.
That's about all Chewy. I can think of. Yeah, Chewie.
Chewy. Yep. Oh, Chewie. God, he kicks so much ass in this movie.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. Like this, for episodes 4 through 6, the main characters get hurt. I mean, you know, Luke gets his hand chopped off, for crying out loud. But like, it felt like they were more invincible. But right away in this, Chewie gets hurt. And it's not a bad injury, but he gets shot in the arm. And like, Chewie never gets hurt. He felt like completely invincible in the original trilogy. So I thought that was really interesting. I didn't know if that kind of was foreshadowing for what was to come with some of those characters.
My heart kind of skipped a beat when that happened, because all of a sudden it was a realization of, oh God, they're mortal and vincible, not invincible, invincible. Yes, if that's the word.
Yeah, they can be vinced.
They can be vinced. Oh, very nice. Much.
Wow, nice. Good minds.
And it was like all within the span of half of a second, I had like the emotion of my heart kind of catching in my throat a little bit, and then like this wave of sadness, and then suddenly I just wanted to like hug Chewie.
Yeah. And it's kind of a strange
calm,
too. We always want
to hug Chewie. Come
That's
on.
True.
Yeah. Chewie, I think, was kind of had the 3PO role in this. Like, he doesn't have any lines. I mean, he, like, growls a lot. But he has so many funny bits in this and so many funny reactions, like shrugs and head shakes. And, you know, like when they said, when Han and Chewie and BB-8 are in that hallway between the two gangs that are chasing after him trying to get their money back, they said, what was the second time? And then they reminded him, and Chewie just, like, nods. Yeah. Like, yep, that was the one. He's not even getting giving up the ghost or like trying to pretend that just that like, didn't
happen. They're right.
Yeah, I love that. I thought Chewie was great. But yeah, I mean, it just showed that they are not young. I mean, Harrison Ford looks pretty good. He's not a young man. He's, what, 73, I think, something like that. Yeah. But he looks 73. They did nothing to make them look any younger than they really are. And
I think they might have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Carrie Fisher did some things to make herself look younger than than she is probably. But I think
Harrison Ford too. I mean, they looked fairly smooth for their ages.
Yeah, that's fair. But I would say in line with Hollywood, I don't think that the film itself did anything to make them feel overly aggressive. We'll see how they do. Again, spoiler horn. We'll see what they do with Luke. That will be very interesting, if how they treat him, if they treat him kind of hermity Obi-Wan Kenobi, or if he just picks up sort of where he leaves off. I don't know. That will be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. We know he's got a pretty good hermit beard. But,
Yeah. He looked really good. Yep. Agreed. So I was very happy. You know, when we did that When You Wish Upon a Star Wars thing, and I think I mentioned it there. I know I tweeted about it, but I really I wanted this movie to be the bridge to the next two after this, wherein the new characters take the reins and run with it. And after that, there would not be a lot of the old characters. And I somewhat stick to that, but the moment that like Han and Chewie were in that ship, I was like, "Don't go!" I really had a strong reaction, much significantly more so than I thought I would. I was trying not to hold on to nostalgia and talking about that recent special episode, but I was trying not to hold on to that, and I just had like a total reaction of like, "I want these people to live forever."
Well, I think that's you had the intended reaction, and I think it's a mourning of a loss, and in any form of it, of whenever that happens, that's how you are supposed to feel. So, I mean, kudos to the filmmakers. I think they really nailed it on the head. It's almost like at the end of Toy Story 3, you know, all of us, I'm going to proudly admit it, like I was choking back tears at the end of Toy Story 3. Yep. And it's kind of the same kind of a principle here that, you know, it has to happen, but you're still like, let's go back to the good old days. Everything is right now. Let's not change it.
Yep. The mortality of everything came through loud and clear. You do lose one major character in this. And, I don't know if we need to say the name necessarily. You know, obviously we sounded the spoiler horn, but you lose someone that was from the original trilogy that is as big a part of this film franchise as there's been, you know, like one of the big three. And it is brutal. And it is, I mean, not brutal in the Saving Private Ryan way.
It's Wicket. We lose Wicket.
Wicket, yes. Grand Moff Tarkin dies again. It is an incredibly moving, and it is staged in a way that he dies honorably and tragically at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard to watch, and I think it makes the person with whom he's battling at that moment that much of a stronger character because of it. Yeah. I think it. The character arc. So, you know what? Let's transition here a little bit. So there are new characters as well. And I would like to start with the villain, which is Kylo Ren, played by
Adam Driver
of Girls fame and a couple other things as well, but mostly from the HBO show Girls. He is very interesting. He goes everywhere from being like almost like a petulant teenager to a badass Sith-like character, mm-hmm. though he is never called a Sith. And he captures both the light and the dark side a bit, or you can see that he battles the light side. And to me, that was the most interesting thing of this whole movie, is that in the whole original trilogy, they talk so much about the good Jedi, you know, the Jedi versus the Sith, the Jedi having to fight off the dark side. And that's the entire path of Anakin. But you never think about the other direction. You never hear about Sith's battling that, right? But here, there's a very open dialogue. And one dialogue is literally with the helmet and skull of Darth Vader saying, I'm feeling the light side. You know, it would be as though Luke went to Yoda and felt like, I feel the dark side encroaching, or Yoda saying that. But it's the other direction. I thought that was really interesting because it's always been unidirectional. You never felt that give and take, but it makes 100% sense that that's the case. It also shows that based on who that character is, that there is potential for light side there and why. And so they go into that too. But I am really excited about that character going forward to see where they go with that. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of scruples that we'll talk about a little bit, or just kind of wishes that we had on that character. But overall, I am really pleased with the direction that they went. I love the voice, like the voice in the mask is so cool.
So yeah. Good.
When when I heard the trailer, I think they threw like trailer voice filters on it where it was really bassy. And I thought it would be a little bit too much, but in the theater, it was absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely perfect. And I was totally in all the way.
I think
The trailers also had some of that famously J.J. Abrams decoy footage. made him seem like the, you know, that ultimate, well, Vader like villain. And it just wasn't in the movie. I thought the character, the story was stronger for it.
Yes. What were you going to say, Andy?
I was going to say two things about Kylo Ren. In the death scene that we were talking about, the very final act by the person who, are we not saying who died? Are we going to?
Yeah, we can say it. Never mind. Go for it.
It's Han Solo. Han Solo dies. The very.
What?
Oh, shit. The very last thing that Han Solo does in very tenderly touching Kylo Ren's face as he falls, that last act of love, that to me, I was talking to Jer on the way home after seeing the movie because I was so excited about it, that I think that's going to be the seed planted, kind of like what you were saying, Kyle, of this continued struggle between light and dark in that character.
Yeah.
Even through all of this, even though while he's killing him, Kylo Ren says, like, thank you for helping me get over this struggle that I have. But even so, then Han Solo displays this act of parental love and forgiveness and then dies. So I think the struggle is going to remain there.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited.
Say that. Who would have thought that would be the way that Han Solo goes out?
Man.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
When he went out on the bridge, though, I was like, oh, crap, he's going to die.
Yeah. I mean, they set it up well, but at the same time, I give credit to Abrams and crew for even when he's standing next to him and he's like handing out his lightsaber, they did a good enough job of setting up Kylo Ren and some of the weakness and the uncertainty and the light side creeping in where I didn't know if he was going to do it.
Yeah,
you know, it set it up in such a way that it could have gone in any direction, regardless of how, you know, where they were, how it would be as a death, right? I mean, like, there was that, but then in that moment where it was, the tables could have turned either way, for me, I felt like that was possible to go either direction. So I really give them credit for that, because you have to, at that moment, even if you see it coming, even if it looks very much scripted, which it did, it felt that way, in that moment, I wasn't sure. And so that's really good filmmaking and really hard filmmaking, too. It's hard to do that really well. The cinematography of that scene, Jesus, that's hard. Sorry, is extraordinary too. So they're on a big long balcony kind of thing. What is it? I don't know. A bridge, I guess.
Yeah,
it's
like a
big long bridge. So it's dumb. Like, why would you ever do that? But that's a whole other issue. But
just make your bridge a little bit wider.
Right. Put railing,
some rails on it.
Yeah. But so they're filming it in a way where the prevailing light is some light from a sun that is coming down, and then some artificial blue light and some artificial red light. And basically, like, if you look at the screenshot from that, half of Kylo Ren's face is red and half of his face is blue. And it's really interesting. And then as the sun goes down and goes away, everything gets darker and his face gets completely red, and you can see his expression turn. And it could be on the nose, but it wasn't. I just thought that was really, really interesting. Like, nice. At that moment, I didn't know if he was going to ask Han if he was going to turn the saber upon himself, or if Han was going to turn the saber upon himself. You know, I mean, again, there were so many options of what that could be, but I just thought the filmmaking aspect of that was really cool.
And the last thing I wanted to say was, in the opening scene, when Poe Dameron has been captured, or right before that, when he tries to shoot at Kylo Ren, and Kylo Ren just freezes the blaster bolt in space and just leaves it there. Oh my God.
That was amazing.
That was.
I mean, there weren't many things that I hadn't ever seen before. I mean, I don't feel like I've seen everything that Star Wars will ever have to offer, but that, I was like, whoa. And I love that it had like a lightning crackle to it. It was like
a hum and a vibration. And then like 5 minutes later, it just like, finally goes off and explodes and scares all the stormtroopers. Oh, I love that. That just made me happy. I could have just left the theater at that point and been satisfied.
Yeah, that was pretty rad. So I have a Facebook group of friends that we sometimes chat movies with, and I've gone to see them a couple times, another crew. And we met up for brunch today at Red Cow in Minneapolis, called the Movie Bros. And so it was like all talking about Star Wars, and there's like people that, you know, weren't huge Star Wars fans, but had seen the movie, and people that were like huge Star Wars fans and knew everything. Josh Freeman, who's been on the show before, he was, I think, boy, I can't remember what it was. Oh, the one where we talked about people that we can only see doing one thing.
Oh, yeah.
I remember. Anyways, yeah. So we were talking, and we Patrick Stevenson asked, what was your favorite part and what did you like the least? And my favorite part isn't even, I don't think, my favorite part of the movie, but I think it's the most meaningful part, is when Poe gets captured and he, you know, gets the knees taken out from under him, and then Kylo Ren leans down to him and you're like, what is going to happen? And then he goes, how does this work? Who talks first? You talk first I talk first? Yeah. Like that moment, it didn't even cut the tension. It just made everything, you were prepared for fun from that moment on. Like if in that moment where there's this, you know, force frozen blaster bolts, you know, he's got this, you know, they're about to massacre a village. And then there's like, he's joking. Like one, it says a lot about Poe Dameron and Oscar Isaac, but I just was like, okay, if they're going to do that now, that is amazing, and that's where it's leading. So that, to me, like, there was never a line like that in Star Wars. All the lines like that were by 3PO, and they were just super-duper stupid puns, right? And so, like, for that to be set up that way, I was so, so happy about that.
I have to say, like, overall, you know, in terms of the casting, it was really great to see the old characters back, but I was more interested in the newer characters.
Yeah, me too.
Like, at the end of it, I was fully engaged and really was interested in the new characters.
Yep, agreed. So let's talk about others of the new characters while you're saying that. So the next one is Poe Dameron. Let's talk about him. He's not in it very much, and I really hope he is more, because Oscar Isaac was perfect. He overacted in a way that was very true to the roots of Star Wars. The scene that made me think that most is when he meets up with BB-8 again. BB-8 is the droid in this movie, and he is extraordinary, and I loved him, and I want all of him. I love him. He's like, BBA buddy, it's so good to see you. And it's like, it's what you'd say to, like, if I saw Andy for the first time in like months and after he was in danger, like that's exactly what I would say to a real person. And he sold it, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel forced or anything like that. It was just really beautiful. And
it was like one of those reunions of an army service dog with his old officer.
Yeah, that is exactly it. Good call. Totally good call. So I think he's great. He is in this and has a moment. I described it today in the brunch that I went to, where he got the moment that Legolas got in Return of the King, where he downed like 5 Oliphants in 2 minutes or whatever. Like, he got that in this first, you know, in episode 7. Like, he didn't have to wait 3 movies to do that. There's one scene where he takes out like 8 starfighters in 10 seconds, or 8 TIE fighters in 10 seconds. Yeah. And Finn goes, that's one hell of a pilot. Like, it's so cheesy, but it's perfect because it's true. And so, yeah, so he got his Legolas moment, which made me really happy. But I thought that was great. Finn, who was played by Mark Boyega, John Boyega? John Boyega, thank you, is extraordinary. And he's a person of color in Star Wars as a main character, which makes me really happy. I think the diversity here with essentially the two main characters are a person of color and a woman. I think that's great. And I was talking with Kate about that, and she said, you know, I'll be most excited when that's not novel. And I think come episodes 8 and 9, that won't be the case, where that won't be featured as much. But for now, I still think it's a really good victory. And she certainly did too. But, you know, we've got a ways to go, but I think it's amazing that is the case.
There was a good bit on SNL where they redid their famous, you know, screen tests for Star Wars, except, you know, except with episode 7. And J.J. Abrams is in it, and Daisy Ridley's in it, and John Boyega's in it. And he shows him reading the script. He's like, a black stormtrooper? Really? A black stormtrooper?
Awesome. I'll see if I can find that and try to embed it in the show notes. That was a good one. I enjoyed that.
Also, that's when I learned that he was British.
Yeah. You should see Attack the Block. It's really good. Really high energy. Really fun. Very Edgar Wright-y.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yep. It's great. So that was good. Any other thoughts on Poe or Finn before we move on? Please keep them coming.
On Finn, I was a little bit annoyed at the character, but then I think he's going to develop into a very interesting character. I mean, I think it's a little bit of the setup akin to a whiny Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
In the first one, there was like, and I know it was part of the character where he's trying to, you know, he's overdoing it to make up for the fact that he's just running away and doesn't really know what's going on, but he's trying to impress a girl, and he's trying to, you know, his motives are actually pretty basic, but,
yeah,
you know, he came across in a couple moments as being a little cheesy, but I think in the larger scope of the of these films, I think it's going to come around. I'm hoping so, where he'll actually, you know, he'll mature and he'll become a little wiser to the world and things like that. So
yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think I'm going to like Finn a lot more in the next two movies, because he in this one, he felt a little, he just felt kind of weak to me. And when a, I don't know, an admirable character trait finally prevails, it's just his devotion to Rey. And that's a good thing, but it's also a little bit schoolboyish.
Yeah.
Well, I think that for him, it's, you know, the fact that he went from being an indentured servant to walking away, you know, I think that's why he's so clumsy.
Yeah.
He never had a chance to wind down, you know. Yeah, he went out of the flame into the fire, essentially, and that's a lot to deal with. I did love the humor that he brought, that Boyega did, you know, the scene of, like, where she says, you know, very kind of intriguingly, it was like, I've never met someone from the rebellion before. He's like, well, this is what we look like. that is me. I am him. Like, it was just like, it's just a dude trying to get some play. Like, that's perfect. I love it.
I love it so great. The scene where he and Han and Chewie, I think, are about to try to infiltrate the rebel base or the enemy base, and he's talking about using the force, and Han's like, that's not how the force works.
I think that's a little bit of a, like, a midichlorians thing. Like, that's not how it works. So great. Without officially calling it out. Exactly. You know, we don't want to call Lucas out. He did in fact make this possible.
Yeah.
Indirectly or very much directly. But yeah, that was pretty great. And then the next major character is that of Rey, who is played by Daisy Ridley, a relative newcomer. I knew nothing about her. Very few people knew what she was before this, but she was really great. So kind of a British Aussie accent. I don't remember where she's from.
She's British.
Is she British? Yeah. Okay. It's got a little bit of a little bit of a twang for British. It's not, you know, empire proper, if you will.
But she is Northern England.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's not quite. It's somewhere between Cushing and Adele. How about that? And I think she was extraordinary. And it's proving that. And again, spoiler, but this is going to be her trilogy. And that is really, really cool. There's an interesting piece of criticism. There's some tweets about, and I wasn't familiar with this trope, but there's a sort of an internet trope of the Mary Sue. Have you guys heard about this at all? You're familiar with that term? It's basically like a female character, and there's a guy equivalent of it too, Gary something, I can't remember what, I don't know, but it's essentially like, it's someone that knows how to do everything in the hopes of making them seem a strong character, even though what is underneath it is not deserved. And so there's a little bit of criticism of her being that, but the reaction, which is by Tasha Robinson, who wrote for the Departed, The Dissolve, which was a great site that Pitchfork ran about film. She's really excellent. She did a reply on The Verge about it. And it's like, you know what? We get this, guys. Like, this is our time. Like, we deserve this. If a guy had that, you would never question, like, oh, how does she know how to fix that? How does she know how to fly that? You would just say, like, Han does that, or a guy does that, or whatever. And so I think it's unfair for that to be called out. I think that is it's an interesting criticism, but I think that she shows vulnerability. I mean, she cries a lot in this movie. You know, she really goes through a lot. Mm-hmm. But I am so happy that this is going to be her trilogy. It's resting on her shoulders in a big, huge way. And I feel that it is in very capable hands in that regard.
She's my favorite character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was great.
I didn't get the sense of that Mary Sue kind of trope. I think they established her character very well in terms of her scavenging abilities and her, she's been, you get a sense very early on that she's had to be a survivor. She's had to, you know, she's had to learn how to fend for herself. And you can imagine then in the environment in which she survived, that she had to develop a lot of very interesting and varied skills. I didn't really ever question the, you know, oh, now she knows how to, it was a little, I guess, fortuitous that she's like, oh, we just have to do all these things to the Millennium Falcon to make it work. Whereas maybe it wasn't specific to the Millennium Falcon, but she just knew how spaceships worked.
You know,
from pulling apart a Star Destroyer piece by piece. Yeah. So
that makes sense to me as well. It's you know, it's the movie really went to some length to establish her as somebody that works with machines for a living.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't really surprise me that she knows how to fix a starship.
Yeah. Yep. And I think the biggest sort of the culmination of it, it was kind of one of those things where, like, if it was one thing, fine. If it was two things, okay, maybe. But I think a lot of people had a hard time with her just picking up the Force. Like, how does she know to do the Force thing? Like, yeah. When she tries to convince the stormtrooper to release her binds and open the door, like, how, you know, where did that come from? I mean, she does do a pushback with Ren when he's trying to read her mind. She pushes back. So I think there was sort of a transference there. And I think it really goes to show.
It was a lightsaber, like, man.
Yeah, the lightsaber could do it too. Yep.
That was the awakening.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. That's a good call. I didn't think about that being an awakening moment. That's interesting.
The sequence of it is that it's after that moment where she touches the lightsaber, and that's when Lupita Nyong'o's character?
Maz.
Yeah. And in her compound, when Rey touches the lightsaber and has all those flashbacks, then...
Flash forwards, maybe?
Flash arounds. Afterwards, Kylo Ren's comment to Supreme Leader Snoke is that there has been an awakening.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think the other direction. I think Snoke said that, but yes, yep, you're right on. Yeah, that's a good call. I didn't think about that the lightsaber could be the trigger for that. And it made me think of, like, kind of a nature-nurture thing, like how much inherent, like how much of being a Jedi is inherent to how much degree of force you have. Like, is it something that if not tapped into, you still have elements of that? Like, you are aware that you can do that, you know?
That's an interesting count must be through the roof.
it's an interesting thought, an interesting discussion, but yeah, I think she is going to be great. I think Daisy Ridley did a really good job. You know, she handled everything with aplomb, so I'm super happy about that. I thought Maz was good, the CG character. It was a very well designed, very well performed. Lupita Nyong'o was great.
It wasn't a Dexter was awesome. Jetster.
Nope, and it wasn't a Jar Jar, thankfully. Thank God. Yep. So, yeah, I thought that was cool. It'll be interesting to see. I hope she comes back, because I feel like there's a lot more. I can see her being in the next one and for sure, and probably the next one after that. I think that's a very interesting supporting character. I feel like you don't get a Lupita Nyong'o if it's not going to stick around.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
Who knows?
She's a bit of a Yoda-esque character.
Yeah, a little bit. Yep, yeah. Agreed.
But then again, Daniel Craig was in the movie, too.
Uh-huh. That's true, as was Nigel Godrich, the producer. But just cameos.
Where was Daniel Craig?
He was They're a stormtrooper. Jeez. Daniel Craig was a stormtrooper that got force manipulated by Rey.
Nice.
Awesome.
The one that loosened the cuffs?
Yep.
Oh, really? That was Daniel Craig? I didn't know that.
I love the way that he delivered the line, and I'll drop my
weapon. I'll drop my weapon.
That was great. That was so great.
Oh, also Simon Pegg was in it.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah. He's the junk dealer on Jakku.
I don't think he's the junk dealer. I think he is. Maybe he is. I don't know, because I feel like that was CG, but maybe he's underneath the suit. I heard he was in Maz's bar. There is two people that call in, which I actually thought this was really a cool deal, where there's a big guy with tusks with a woman sitting next to him. The woman leaves to call the Republic that they see the droid, and then there's a droid that calls the First Order to say that they see the droid. I thought that was really cool that they did both
all the way around.
The droid
calls the Resistance, but
got it. But I think the big guy with the tusks was Simon Pegg. That's okay. I could be mistaken. Yeah, but he's in there. Yeah, I love it. Any other new characters you guys wanted to talk about? Domhnall Gleeson was there. He was okay.
I liked him.
He's a little over.
I liked him.
Yeah. A little over the top, but I think in a good way.
It's kind of a thankless role. He did a good job in it.
He very much channeled every Imperial officer before him.
Pretty much.
Yep.
I just hated him, and that tells me that Domhnall Gleeson did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to know more about Snoke.
Oh, man.
Yeah, me
Tell
too.
Me about it.
That's all. Yep.
Where he got the scars?
Like, who is he?
Is he giant?
He's a hologram. So is he truly giant? Or are we going to find out he's actually a wee little man who just likes to make himself big in holograms? What is he?
I called it an ego hologram because I think he's probably pretty small.
Yeah,
could be.
Was that Max von Sydow that was the voice?
No, Max von Sydow is in the beginning of the movie. He's the guy who gives Poe the map.
And the voice is Andy Serkis.
Of course.
Oh, yep. He's every voice.
Yeah, he did a good job with that. I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah. I'm very intrigued. Well, I think character-wise, we've said it enough, but I think it's in really good hands, and I think that I'm really pleased with the performances. There was nothing that really stuck out for me. You know, 3PO was there. He had a great introduction. I mean, yeah. potentially one of the most touching moments of the movie. His head just pops in. He's like, hello. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's perfectly
3PO. Eat his eyes. See 3PO.
Yeah.
So great. Did I miss the explanation on the red arm?
Nope.
So it doesn't.
There was none.
All right.
No, okay. He says that too. He's like, I bet you can barely recognize me with my red arm. Yeah. It's just like, come on, 3PO. We know you. Yeah. It's like if a droid could have insecurity, it would be 3PO.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he would have it about his red arm. Yeah. No, I'm sure there's like a comic out there that explains it somehow, but not in the movie.
I loved there's a brief little moment, super fast, but it made me and the entire audience laugh when it's on the Millennium Falcon when Finn is trying to convince Rey that he is part of the resistance, and he's trying to tell BB-8 to tell Rey what the base is, and then he finally does, and he gives BB-8 the thumbs up, and BB-8 sticks out the little lighter.
Yeah.
Oh man,
it's adorable.
They roared in our theater.
Oh god, that was so good.
Yeah. So I saw this, I forgot to mention this, but I saw it again. So we saw it Thursday night as a crew, and then our 12-year-old Aiden on, I can't remember if it was Wednesday night or Thursday, said, Kyle, what are you doing Friday night at 7 p.m.? Which is hilarious because like Friday nights is, we never do anything. We always just like have movies and get pizza and just hang out. So it's very much like a very traditional night in for us and hanging out and just chilling. And I was like, I think I'm available. You know? and so he surprised us. So Aiden bought, I think with Kate's help, but bought the tickets for us, the four of us to go. Oh, and nice. Then Coleman bought the popcorn and sodas.
Aww.
So that was their Christmas present for us. So we went and saw it Friday night too. And they died at that moment. The boys just absolutely died at that moment.
Yeah.
It was great, as did most everybody. But yeah, that one hit very, very well. Yeah. Ah, so good. So the other comment points that I put in here were just the energy and the humor. I think we've certainly established that here, that those were in big amounts. So I think they did a great job.
It was there, but it was appropriate, and it wasn't episode 2 C-3PO one-liners.
Yeah, or yeah. Jar Jar stepping in poodoo. I mean, like...
Yeah, it was like you said earlier, who talks now? Do you talk? Do I talk? Who talks now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
It was actually funny.
It was funny.
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of the Joss Whedon style, which I say very favorably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a good way to describe it.
Yep. I found the filmmaking was really good. I thought the CG was top-notch. There was nothing that really stuck out to me. I mean, there was nothing in there that I was like, I don't know about that. Did you guys see anything that kind of bugged you?
I wasn't totally sold on the CG. I mean, it was really good, but it felt just a little bit cartoonish to me. It just took it out of reality just a notch.
Snoke, the CG of Snoke was a little much. I don't know. There was that to me was the most obvious. Like, oh, you are clearly. There's nothing real about you. There's no model basis here. The character of Maz, I was worried would do that, but really I thought it was well done.
Me too.
I think a puppet would have been, if a puppet is 100% real, this was probably 85 to 90%. And it was good. It was a good character. So that helped a lot
its
purpose in the film was important, and I liked it. So that I think helped me get over the CG part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the writing really helped it. I mean, think back to episode 1 and how amazing a lot of the CGI is and how terrible the lines are.
Yep.
And Watto, I mean, he looked pretty damn good, but he sounded pretty damn stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Although I will say about Snoke that when you discover that he's a hologram, it's a surprise. You know, in that room, I thought it was like, what in the hell is that giant thing? Like, how is this real? Like, what is going on? But I never thought it was a hologram until something fell through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay.
Maybe he's not that big. My whole reality is out of place.
Yep. Yep. They did a good job with that. Yeah. Well, let's move on to some criticisms or some wishes. Andy, you had a specific one. Do you maybe want to start that up?
Yeah. And it's petty. I mean, we're going to be splitting hairs here. But I will say that I was a little bit surprised that Kylo Ren, being apparently this very powerful force wielding creature, whether he's a Sith or not, but being bested in a lightsaber duel by two people with no lightsaber experience. Now, granted, one of them was Rey, who is post-awakening, so maybe she was imbued with some kind of skill.
With whom the Force is strong.
With whom the Force is strong. And maybe, you know, for if we're going to go super deep Jedi nerddom here now. Okay, so maybe if you're a Force user, maybe your powers are not in lightsaber dueling, but are in mind control.
Making things hold still.
Yeah, freezing blaster bolts in midair, which, gotta admit, pretty damn cool.
Yeah, and clearly Kylo Ren was very good at that one.
And, you know, so maybe that's just not his strong point. And whatever, that's fine. And also, he got shot by Chewie before the battle, too. So,
yep. But, and you saw like six times. You didn't realize how much they overdid it until you saw what happened. But they showed like Chewie's crossbow being the most powerful gun in the history of ever, five times before that. And so he gets shot in the hip by that. Like, that's something. I mean, admittedly, he has armor, but that was something. I have a counterpoint to that, which I think he was toying with Finn. I think he was not going 100%. Yeah, I think he was probably down to 80% by virtue of bleeding. And then did you see him hit himself?
Yeah, several times.
He like hit himself in the side a bunch of times to kind of channel that pain and that anger. So I don't feel like with Finn he was all in. I don't think he was all in with Rey until he was all in with Rey, and then he did not win. You know, I think at that point he was weakened pretty significantly. But they did such a good job of establishing him as this petulant kind of teenager, like not super whiny, but having that there, like one of my favorite scenes, and I enjoyed it even more the second time around, is the first time that they have the general come in and be like, oh no, and have to tell him that they lost the droid.
Yeah.
So he says that they lost the droid, and he reveals his lightsaber and slashes up a control board.
Yeah.
And then not even a beat later goes, anything else? Like, there was no, it was just like, okay, I just had to get that out. It's just like, it was his screaming into his pillow, right? I mean, it was, so it shows that he's completely out of control. And then he does that again when Rey escapes and he destroys that. And I love the stormtroopers are out, they come in and then leave. I'll come back later.
Yeah. And I was thinking about those ones as well. And that's why I'm willing to back up the movie on this point that, I think, Kylo Ren just is young and brash, and also his training is not complete.
His training is not complete at all.
As you said, Andy, I think that lightsaber just is not his strong point.
And I think he left when he was fairly young.
True.
So he was very inexperienced and didn't have the appropriate amount of training, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that will come through in the next movie or two for sure.
He only took intro lightsaber, not advanced lightsaber.
It's his minor.
He only got to the 200 level. You know, I was talking about this morning at the brunch, and I found that Jedi in their ideal form, kind of the platonic form of a Jedi, I don't find very interesting, like, which was largely the prequels, right? Because they're they're in theory very proper, but I think what the prequels did wrong is that they did not make them... you could not empathize with them. Like, they were as much of the enemy as Sith, and they were as much responsible for their own downfall out of naivety, out of being unwilling to see. I mean, there's just a lot of this. But, like, Luke in A New Hope is really interesting. Luke in Empire is incredibly interesting and very torn. Luke in Jedi, he's a cool character, but he's not that interesting to me.
Yeah.
And so the...
Until the end.
He gets better, yes, but even at the end, he puts on his kind of Buddhist hat a little bit, and that to me is not that interesting. So my fear, my hope is that they shy away from that, is that they go to the human side of the Jedi, not the Jedi side of the human. You know what I mean? Fair. Like, I really want that to be the case. If they do eventually, I mean, I think Luke will certainly have aspects of that. Maybe he is kind of Yoda-y. I mean, I think he will from a training standpoint. Maybe he will from a philosophical standpoint. But I really hope that they keep the energy level such that it doesn't get into that... I don't know. I can't think of it any other way than just being boring and too proper. So that's my hope. And with Kylo Ren, I think they're starting that off in a really big way. Vader is terrifying, not super interesting because you don't know much about him. And admittedly, like, he's the greatest villain of all time, right? Except for maybe Hal from 2001, but that's another story. but like, from like, you want to know so much about him, but you don't, and that's somewhat what makes it interesting. I don't know. It's so hard. The Jedi thing and this thing is very challenging in that way.
Well,
so
I'll give you a little counterpoint there, Kyle. I'm not disagreeing with you, because I do agree with you. But I will say, going back to like the prequels and this idealized version of the Jedi that we're kind of presented with, Granted, they're wooden performances, and that's boring in and of itself. They could do sidebar. They could do, you know, they do like Point Blank Live. They could do like the Phantom Menace Live with just all audience members. Really. Anyway, we talked about it. I just actually recently listened to our Star Wars episodes and the When You Wish Upon a Star Wars special episode. Nice. And we kind of talk about the ivory tower aspect of the Sith and how, or of the Jedi. And that distance that they placed between themselves and the world was one of the reasons that led to their downfall, like you said. So I think that that's their characters become interesting when there's a conflict for them to address. And at that period in time, there really wasn't a conflict that they were willing to address. And so they became intentionally distant. So I agree that I guess I'm just agreeing with you all around here. But it was done poorly in the prequels, but the point was made that I think things got much, much more interesting when there was conflict, which is like filmmaking, storytelling 101.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Any other criticisms or things that you wish were different? I've got one more, but I want to throw that out there to see what other folks have.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Mine is I was bummed that Captain Phasma was not cool. I love Gwendolyn Christie. Yeah. She plays Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones, and I just love that character, and I think she's extraordinary. And I had such hope. I mean, when it was announced that she was cast, I super hoped that she was the Sith or the evil or whatever. Right, like, you know what I mean? That, like, I was convinced even after the first trailer that she was the baddie, and I was super excited about that. So maybe I got my expectations a little high, but it's a cool character. The armor is really cool, and I liked her performance overall, but it's like nothing happened with her. I was super bummed about that. And we talked about a few things this morning at brunch that, you know, we wish were a little bit different. But there was nothing that, you know, whenever I think about that thing, I always try to, in my mind, pull back and say, like, okay, what could have been removed to make that possible? And I couldn't really think of anything that would have been removed. But the only thing I could think of was the Wrath-Tar battle, like the big octopus battle thing. And the, like that. I don't know, but it was fun. That would be about the only thing that I think could come out that could have, you know, beefed her character up a little bit. But that was my only bummer. There's been a lot of criticism about, well, this is a whole nother side point. Any commentary on that at all? Anybody else feel the same?
I would like to have seen more of Captain Phasma, but I know that J.J. Abrams is holding that character arc in reserve to have something else to build on. Yeah. And I'm going to chalk it up to good pacing, really.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I hope so too.
I'm wondering though if there was more of her shot that just didn't make the final cut.
Could be.
Yeah. That could be for sure. The other criticism that's been leveled, as I've been kind of reading reviews and just listening to what people are saying now that I'm paying attention to that, is that it's very much a rehash of the original trilogy. When you look at it, as is the case with many movies, if you look at things that are bad, you will see them. But if you don't look for them, you won't necessarily see them. And I get that. It is a complete rehash of the original trilogy movies. They are, you know, battling a giant spherical evil thing. Yeah. There is a trench in which they fly. There is, you know, they're shooting a cavern spot thing to blow up said spherical evil thing. You know what I mean? There's just so many things that tie in that way that it feels like a rehash, or it could. But to me, they didn't have to do exactly that, but it's weird how risky this movie is. When you think of Star Wars, you don't think of risky, but like for a franchise that was as damaged as this was by the movies which came before it, it really took a risk in doing this because it could have ruined the franchise forever. You know, it could have been, you know, like the Fantastic Four with Uma Thurman, but that was before Marvel was even a thing around in the world again. But you know what I mean? Like they could have really blown it and they didn't. And I chalk up the safeness of that decision to the rehash feeling. And overall, I don't care. I just loved it. I just enjoyed the bejesus out of it. And so, and I think that's what most people feel like. I think the criticism is valid. I just don't care.
Same here.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, I saw a lot of parallels between this and Episode 4, but I was like, I think it's enough of its own thing that it didn't really matter. I didn't think it needed to stray from that at all. because the rest of it was so interesting.
I agree. I would also add that if you wanna dwell on flaws in a Star Wars movie, this is not the one.
Yeah, good call.
I mean, you can pick any of the other six movies, and you have more to complain about.
I agree completely. All right, well, let's talk just a little bit before we close up here about what's to come in the Star Wars world. So we are all going to see it many more times, I'm sure, which is great. But in the movie-making universe, there is Rogue One, which, if I understand it correctly, is the story of the people who get the Death Star plans, I think. Is that right? Has anybody else heard that? I don't know.
I haven't heard much about it. At least when Nerdist was first talking about this movie, I thought it was a Boba Fett movie.
Well, they're potentially doing that, too. So Lucasfilm was sold to Disney. Disney bought Lucasfilm for $4 billion, which now feels like the sale of the century. Blue Light Special, get it while it's hot, because they're going to make... They made $535 million this weekend, they announced, or somebody estimated.
How much did they make before the movie was even released? I'm curious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was $125 million of pre-sales, something like that.
It's crazy. Yeah, I wonder how much they made off of merchandising.
Yeah, the previous winner...
The search for more money.
The search for more money. The movie that was number two was Jurassic World from this past year, and that was $205 million, and this was 280-some. So it nearly was 50% higher, which is amazing. And $500 million-some globally. So they're doing okay.
Nobody's here.
Thank goodness, because Disney needed the help.
Yeah, that's true. We can
keep the lights on for one more month.
I gotta say, man, I give Disney props. I don't usually give major companies props, but like Disney bought Marvel and they haven't screwed it up. Disney bought Lucasfilm and it seems like they haven't screwed it up, and they have had plenty of chance to screw it up. So I will give you props, Disney. Good job.
Yeah,
seriously. This feels like McDonald's buying Chipotle and then not touching it.
Yeah, totally. Good call. Good call. So there's Rogue One coming a year from yesterday, I think it is. And then Episode 8 will be in 2017, so just down the road from here.
With Rian Johnson directing that one?
Rian Johnson directing, yes. That will be interesting. Of Brick and the brothers Bloom, is that right?
Yeah, and there's one other.
Looper.
And Looper, yep.
Yeah, he's extraordinary. So that will be very interesting. I know he's been consulting with JJ this whole time he's been around, so that's great. I'm very hopeful for that. Episode 9 will be 2 years after that, and then they haven't announced the spinoff movies specifically, but they mentioned that there will be, and that's where supposedly a Boba Fett movie is going to be, maybe a Han Solo movie, maybe a Yoda movie. My hope, and we talked about this in our When You Wish Upon a Star Wars special episode, which is our first special episode, that we, you know, that they really do the Marvelification, if you will, of Star Wars, where the Star Wars movies, episodes 7, 8, and 9, are equivalent to the Avengers movies, where everybody comes together, where it's the big action set pieces, and then you have the smaller, Iron Man movies, which are still really big. And so maybe those are the spinoffs, but aren't quite as big. And then you have the Jessica Jones, which are dark and, kind of R-rated, or Daredevil, same kind of thing. So I am fascinated by that. And I really hope that's where they go with this. It'll be really interesting to see. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see if they go quite that dark. I really hope they do. I mean, we talked about a lot of potential options for that in that special episode, everything from like legal procedurals to like Sith focused stuff. So there's just so much property to be mined that I think they can do it. And I really hope that's the direction that they go in.
Yeah. I'm still looking for a story about the actual rise of the Jedi Order. I mean,
yeah.
We've come up with some pretty dang good ideas, I think, in our special episode. So Disney should just listen to that.
Yep.
And we'll give them a lot of things to work on.
Eisner, Lucas, give us a call.
Yep. Handy residuals. Yep.
Yes.
We just need a small percentage.
That's right.
A pittance, really. Just
give us 1% of the box office gross, and we'll be set.
Yeah, I think
also cameos.
And cameos.
Cameos.
I'd be willing to do 99/100% for 2 cameos. I'm willing to cut it just a little bit. All right. So now we're at the end here. So we're going to do our traditional rating, which is out of 10, 1 being terrible, 10 being, oh my God, perfect. In the scale of your choosing, let's go backwards. Mark, what is your rating in the scale of your choosing?
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 compressors.
Nice. Lee Han Solo, how about you? What is your rating?
I will say 9.5 portions out of 10.
Nicely done.
Nice. Very good. I am going to give it 9 Wrath Tars out of 10.
That's a lot of Wrath Tars.
It is a lot of Wrath Tars. It's three times as many, in fact. It's
yeah, you're going to be a big freighter.
I am. I've got one. Don't worry. Andy, yeah, how about you?
Not sure what that meant. I watched a video before I get to my prediction or my rating. I watched a video of the local film critic here for the Grand Rapids Press who ranked all 7 episodes from worst to best. And I largely agree to them, but not exactly. And he put this one at number 4, right in the middle, which was a little surprising. I thought it was a little lower than maybe it deserved. And kind of in rating this in my own head, where I would put this, I think this might be top 3 for me.
Okay.
I'm going to rate this one 8.5 deserted Star Destroyers out of 10.
Nice. Literally deserted. Deserted.
Deserted and deserted.
Yes. So, Andy, let's. Why don't you do your whole 7 here? So go from worst to best of the episodes for you.
Starting with the worst, episode 2 is the worst. Yep. Episodes 1 and 3, I can kind of interchange in the second worst slot. I'll put episode 1 as the second worst for now, and then 3 after that. Then I'm going to put episode 6 as the right in the middle of the pack. Granted, the gap between the third worst and fourth worst is a large gap. I don't want to stain Return of the Jedi too much with its proximity to the others, but numerical orders being what they are. After episode 6, I would put episode 7 as the third best, then episode 4, and then episode 5 being the best.
All right. Nice. Lee, how about you? What would be your order from worst to best?
Oddly enough, mine kind of go in order of episodes. Like 1 is my least favorite.
Okay.
2, 3, 4. And then, I don't know, with 5, 6, and 7, I guess I would put 7 as my third favorite. 5 is my second favorite, and Jedi is my favorite still.
Nice. Awesome. Mark, how about you? What's yours from worst to best?
I'm going to qualify this, first of all, in that episode 7 is so fresh that I need time for it to digest to see where it falls really with the others. But
fair enough. Yeah. Yep.
But that being said, my initial reaction is worst to best, 2, 1, 3, 4, 6, 5, 7.
Wow.
This is my favorite one.
Wow.
Awesome.
Favorite one.
Wait, so 2, 1, 3, what were the next ones?
4, 6, 5.
4, 6, 5. Wow. All right.
7.
Okay.
Awesome. I think I'm usually of the opinion that no matter how good your premise is, you need to execute. And this episode 7 is by far the best execution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good call.
All right.
Yeah, like, and honestly, I could switch mine around, my last 3 around. I mean, they're all, you know, Empire, Jedi, and then Force Awakens are interchangeable, really, for me.
Yeah. Yep. Mine would be from worst to best, 2, 1, 3, 6, tie between 4 and 7 and 5.
Right.
So Force Awakens and A New Hope are tied for second, and Empire is the best still.
And I assume that I'm correct in assuming that all of us, if you were to put these out in a linear graph, the bottom 3 would be far, far away from the top 4.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
Yeah. Very much so.
Agreed. Also, you're correct in assuming that we've all graphed this.
Yes.
That's true. Many, many times over. Nice. Well, thank you, gentlemen. This was really good. We could probably go on about another hour and a half of this, but I think an hour of this is probably enough for our listeners. So we will do this over beers sometime. But this was really good. Thanks for doing this. I'm so happy that this is out. I mean, we kind of didn't know if it ever would happen again. You know, it's pretty extraordinary to have a movie that is Star Wars and is good. So I'm just incredibly happy about that. And I'm excited to see it again. Maybe I'll do an IMAX over the holiday break. We'll see.
Nice.
We'll see what happens.
I'm going to try and see it again over the break too.
Nice. All right, cool. Well, this is part of the Remaker's Mark podcast series, which is part of the Math is Hard network of podcasts or blogs. If you'd like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcasts on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes, which is also attached to this audio file on your podcast player, where we include links to all of the previous episodes, actors, actresses, and movies that we discussed here. So, thanks, gents. Until the next time, I mean, there is never a better time to say this than there is right now. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
I love you.
I know.